is testifying.
That was mentioned as
future. Going to open the House Committee on Agriculture and Natural Resources. Today is February 2nd, 2012. Going to open a public hearing on House Bill 4005 and ask our colleague, who then needs to be excused for a medical appointment or check up something, to share his thoughts about his... technically, it's shown up as a committee bill, but really, it's his bill. So tell us about your bill.
Well, thank you very much, Chair Clem and Chair Esquivel. I appreciate, first of all, I once again thank the committee for taking this bill as a committee bill, because I think it's an important bill. I think it's a no-brainer, and I know I'll probably have some opposition on that.
By yourself still.
Yes. Thank you, Chair Clem. State Representative Bob Jensen from House District 58. That's basically northeastern Oregon, and in the future years, it will literally be all of northeastern Oregon, thanks to the redistricting. And I will inherit, in the process of this, the now infamous MNAHA PAC. I have, something of a personal involvement interest in this now rather than the abstract involvement I might have had in my previous district. At any rate, my thanks to the committee for that. My thanks to the committee for allowing me to testify early on this, and my apologies to the committee and to everybody in the audience that I won't be able to be here for the rest of the hearing, because I do have a long-standing commitment this afternoon in Portland for medical purposes. The bill basically is really, in my estimation, fairly simple. We're trying to ensure that the people who lose livestock to predators, particularly and especially predators that are in some way, manner, shape, or form protected by state or federal legislation, and this is the basic intent that we have for the bill. I do need to advise the committee and to advise members of the audience here today that there are fundamentally three amendments that are going to be coming, I think, as one amendment to this bill. The first one came up. It wasn't my catching it, but I think staff's catching it. That maybe, in spite of what our intention was, Wolf wasn't even going to be considered to fall under the jurisdiction of this bill. So we're going to make sure in an amendment form that Wolf does fall under the jurisdiction of the bill. Secondly, when I looked at it, it came to my attention that cougar, mountain lion, puma, whatever term you want to use for that big cat.
Varmint.
Huh?
Varmint.
Varmint, varmint doesn't really sound like a big predator, but that's all right. At any rate, particular animal didn't fall into the definition that we have for predator, and so we're going to make there is an amendment to make sure that that particular thing is taken care of. And there is some question about the tax credit and the type of tax credit. And excuse me, Mr. Welch, what is the term I want for that?
Refundable
tax credit.
We want it to be a refundable tax credit. We'll get hard money for this, regardless of whether we do or do not, whether the landowner or the rancher or farmer does or does not have a tax liability, that they will get a tax credit in a form of a check of some sort from the state of Oregon. So those are the three changes that will be present. I don't think they alter the intent. And again, my thanks Chair Clem, Chair Escobar, and members of the committee for your hearing this bill. And anything I can do to be of assistance, other than in the next couple of hours this afternoon, I will be happy to do that.
Okay. Any questions for our colleague? If not, we'll send him off to
Thank you.
Get the good bill. All right. So Bill Hoyt and Daryl Fuller, do you want to join us? And as Representative mentioned, we won't be moving this bill today, so if that was all you're here for, these are our only two speakers, and then you can feel free to leave. We won't be offended and deal with the rest of our legislation.
Chair Clem, Chair Escobar, committee members, my name is Bill Hoyt. I'm the immediate past president of the Oregon Cattlemen Association and the legislative committee chair. I'm here to testify on this bill. We feel like, as was previously mentioned, the amendments that are potentially coming, we would be in favor of. As it's written today, as you see it, we're going to remain neutral on it if it does not get amended. And the main reason for that is that we feel like that if you had no tax liability, or your tax liability was zero because for other reasons, that this bill would not be of any assistance at all to the rancher. And if it was a refundable tax credit, then it would be of significant assistance to a rancher. But in cases of family ranches and where they're struggling to make ends meet, there already is a limited tax liability, and so that this would not be of assistance, because in Section 5 it says that it could not be past zero if it was past zero. So if you already had a zero tax liability, this bill would not have any impact at all. So we feel like that we appreciate the sentiment behind the bill and why it's here, and we think it's a great idea, and we would really like to see it move forward, and we would be in support of amendments that have been previously mentioned. So we're very pleased that at least we're taking a look at this.
Great. Thanks. Daryl.
Co-chairs, member of the committee, Daryl Fuller, on behalf of the Oregon State Sheriff's Association. We support the bill. We're particularly interested and appreciate the fact that the language in subsection 3 of section 2 talks about who's authorized to provide the certified statement that the livestock was killed. We wanted to make sure that language was permissive enough that sheriffs and sheriff's deputies could do that, and that it wasn't restrictive to just certain classes of who can make those certifications. I do have one question mentioned at Representative Jensen. I'm not sure that we understand what a certified statement is, if that's already clarified someplace else in terms of what a certified statement by a law enforcement officer or by somebody else is, and so we know what that's going to be, that's fine, but if not, I mentioned to Representative Jensen, we might want to make sure that's clear in the bill if it's not someplace in the law that I'm just not familiar with, and with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions for this panel? All right. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, if you'll indulge me, I'd like to hear from ODF&W. There's a couple questions I'd like to ask
Kurt,
them.
Kurt, can you join us? Or Ron, both.
Come on, Ron, get up there.
Come on now.
Beating poor old Kurt to the wolves.
Oh, no. That's good. This will be a long day. You want to...
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a couple questions. This has been brought up that this isn't it may not specifically work for the wolf, but do we have a large amount of predators that are under the Threatened Species or Endangered Species Act from the federal side of this thing, or what? How many do we have in Oregon? We have a lot of predators that come under that?
Co-Chair Clem, Co-Chair Escobar, we agree with Representative Jensen's comments about needing to clarify just what species this is intended to cover, because under the current language, our interpretation is that it would essentially not cover any species in Oregon. There are no predatory animals that are fur bearers that are also listed under the Endangered Species Act. So it does, in order to cover any species, it would need to be amended.
Okay. And could you tell us who you are speaking the answer to the question?
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's okay.
Even though
Coach,
we've
I'm Coach Esquivel, my first hearing of the session after a long dry spell, so I'm not a lot of practice. For the record, my name is Kurt Melcher, Deputy Director of the Department of Fish and Wildlife.
Okay. My next question is what was brought up by Mr. Fuller, is who exactly is able to determine whether it's a dog or a wolf? How do you determine that?
Yeah. Co-Chair Clam, Co-Chair Esquivel, again, that's certainly a very important question. And in the case of a wolf investigation, we do have staff on every reported possible wolf depredation. We send staff out to investigate. So with regard to wolves, it's not an issue because we have staff there doing that investigation. With regard to the other predators, whichever other predators that this bill may or may not cover in the end, we may not have staff. We certainly don't have staff investigating every potential cougar depredation event or every coyote event. So I think there needs to be some clarification on who is authorized to do the investigation. Is it simply, and what the level of investigation needs to be? Is it just simply there is a dead animal and it looks like something, and clearly something ate it? Is that adequate to certify a loss, or does it need to be much more rigorous than that? So, some words of caution there.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And do you know if under, like, the either statutes or rulemaking going on around the Wolf Compensation Fund, does that term certified statement have any bearing with anything we're already doing? Is there something like that that exists?
Co-Chair Clem, I do not know. I'm looking to Ron Anglin here, and he may have some additional information to share.
Co-chairs Clem and Esquivel, for the record, Ron Anglin, Wildlife Division Administrator. No, we don't use a certified statement within the compensation bill. It just refers to must be validated by and confirmed by Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife.
Yeah, okay. Okay, any department questions? Representative Springer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know that I have a question. I have a big question. Representative Esquivel, you brought up a good point, and I'm thinking back more years than I choose to admit that I'm thinking back. When I was a young deputy in Eastern Oregon, and I don't remember what it was, there was a sheep kill. I think we decided it was a dog. And I'm sure somebody is going to say something about what I'm saying, and I hope they do, quite frankly. I remember back my training in investigating that was nil, and the training I received on that particular call was a rancher that came by and helped. Now, we are talking a few years back, but I say that, I share that because I'm thinking through the cops I know, and some would know and some would not, and I know I've been called out on certain calls. I just really wasn't animal calls that I was not equipped for or that I particularly was equipped for, and it had nothing to do with training or experience that was given me on the job site. It was what I brought to the table. And so I think I say all that to say we really need to explore that issue, certified kill, a little bit. I don't want to create such a convoluted process that nobody can get a certified kill, but I think we need to be careful because I'm concerned we would go to the extreme one way or the other, which could unravel this whole program, which would be there's too many certified kills that maybe aren't, or we have to, like I mentioned at a prior meeting, I think our interim days, a necropsy is required. Well, nobody's going to pay for a necropsy to receive less money than that necropsy, animal autopsy requires. I see this as being an issue that we really need to work out so the law works effectively.
Co-chairs Clem and Esquivel, I think that where it probably comes more into play than anything else would be if you include cougar, that landowners do have the capability of killing a cougar that's caused damage on their property without any kind of a permit from the department. So there's actually no involvement, and we take it on the landowner's word that a cougar, in fact, killed that. Now, a lot of landowners do use Wildlife Services, and Wildlife Services does, in fact, confirm that and take the appropriate action or recommend the appropriate action for the landowner. So depending on how you go, and certainly deputies are fully capable of carrying out those kind of investigations if they've got the right kind of training. And, you know, I think that's the concern. There is one other thing I think I would like to point out to you in the bill language that may be an unintended consequence. Right now it says it's threatened or endangered species that are on the Federal Endangered Species Act. Remember, in Northeast Oregon, wolves are not federally listed. They're only on the state list. So the way this is written, Northeast Oregon, Wallowa County, Umatilla County, everything east of 395 would not be covered by this bill, and I don't think that's your intent, and I don't think that was Representative Jensen's intent. So that might be something else, if you're looking at amendments, you might want to look at. And along those lines, we are working with the service on trying to get all of Oregon federally delisted, and so if it was very narrowly confined, again, it would not meet, I think, the intent that you wanted.
Chair Escobar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering why we make things so complicated. Why don't we just say a wolf?
Yep. I think that's kind of what we're going to try and do.
Can't we just say a wolf?
Don't cloud the issues with common sense, Representative.
LC gets paid out of work.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything else for these gentlemen? All right. Thank you.
Thanks.
I'm going to carry over. Do I close the public hearing?
Close the
public hearing on House Bill 4005. Carry over House Bill 4005. Do I have to open the work session first? Carry over work session on House Bill 4005. Open a public hearing on House Bill 4006. Yeah, and Doris, Jim, why don't you make your way up, and in the meantime, Beth will explain the Dash 2 amendment.
Yeah, so the concept the committee is familiar with, it's the mitigation and consultation with cities and counties that you've heard about in the past. But the Dash 2 amendment, which LC was amazing, and they got it off and drafted so quickly, they're just working away down there, but it removes the section one of the act. So I'm sorry you haven't had a chance to review this yet. It removes the section one of the act that kind of speaks more broadly to wildlife management, and so it would just be kind of focus on the listing of the species, and then in addition on it's going to add a local, in addition to consulting with cities and counties, it also you have to consult with local service districts.
I also believe we want to make sure that it's a mandatory consulting with landowners as well. I think we kind of left that out on that brief. So I wanted to throw that in for the record.
Okay.
Doris.
Mr. Co-Chair, Representative Esquivel, members of the committee, I'm Doris Penwell from the Association of Counties. We've heard this bill several times, and here we are again, officially. Pardon?
We call it the Penwell Bill.
Oh, I thought it was a Grassley bill. But anyway, I'm here in support of House Bill 4006, and from what I hear, the amendments that have been proposed. They are acceptable to ALC. As you know, this bill was about developing a better relationship with our consulting, advising, and cooperating with the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife when they proposed changes to endangered species protections. And over the last year, things have gone quite well. We want to be sure that it continues that way, and we hope the statute can be changed to make this so. The governor actually formed a Oregon Solutions project over the endangered species issue of the sage grouse, and that has gone for more than a year, and that's working out to be just fine. But you know, we don't want to have to do a governor's Oregon Solutions project every time one of these issues comes up. We'd like to have it a way of doing business, both from the standpoint of local government as well as the state. So that's why we are in support of the bill. The bill, the amendments to the bill that you have proposed, that have been proposed here, remove the first section, which I guess I would say were not of the meat of the bill. But it leaves a section that says the department may advise, consult, and cooperate with all of those entities, the federal government and landowners. So they are being consulted with. And I take assurance from the department that that will continue to be so. The rest of the bill changed, as you commented, to leave the bill the same but add local service districts as an entity that would be consulted with for mitigation purposes, et cetera. So it's as we had intended originally. Local service districts is a good addition. They are frequently part of the discussions that we have. Any questions?
Jim, why don't you go ahead?
Okay. Jim Welsh with Oregon Cattlemen. Chair Clem and Chair Escoville, thank you for bringing this forward. Been here before on this issue, even in 2011, and supporting this language in this bill. And I think the amendments are friendly. And in response to Chair Escoville's concern about also working with the landowners is always, you know, very, very important here. I know that language in here says local economies, and that does include certainly all the private landowners, entities, businesses, our cities, and who are incorporated, and our counties. And we also, as Cattlemen Association, our members work very closely with our counties. But our certainly the rural areas in this state can be very adversely affected by any kind of a designation, threatened or endangered, and so this is something I think is very much needed, and we support them in their efforts. And I have talked with Judge Grasty at length on this, even in his hometown in Burns and at the county level. So we have worked together, as they have on the sage grouse, along with private landowners. Thank you very much.
No questions for this panel? All right, thank you. We got the amendment back quickly, but we don't have the paperwork back, so close the public hearing on House Bill 4006. Carry over a work session on House Bill 4006. Open a public hearing on House Bill 4072. And ask. Well, we have four chairs. Okay, so maybe I need five chairs. Okay, Christina, do you want to bring your crew up?
Want to bring the group?
Yeah. Mike, Melvin, Jake, and RD, and Christina. Maybe one chair short.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'll just be here for 1 second.
Okay.
For the record, my name is Christina McNitt, and I'm representing the Oregon Forest Industries Council and Roger Beyer on behalf of Oregon Small Woodlands Association. Would also like to weigh in and say we both, our association, support House Bill 4072. It's, from our perspective, a housekeeping bill. Not a lot to say about it, but it's a very, very important bill. And it's so important that it brought four guys up that I'm going to introduce you to. R.D. Buell is sitting in the corner, and he's going to take my chair as soon as I get up. And he came from Gilcrest, representing the Walker Range Forest Association. Melvin Thornton, on my far left, is from the Douglas County Forest Protective Association from Roseburg, and Mike Robeson from the Coos Bay Forest Protective Association in the middle. Jake Gibbs here is on my immediate left, and he's the landowner, also serves on two of these three boards, and is going to present to you first. So thank you very much for hosting this hearing.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Co-Chair Clem, Co-Chair Esquivel, members, thank you very much for giving us this opportunity to speak to you. I'm Jake Gibbs with Lone Rock Timber out of Roseburg, and as Christina mentioned, I serve on the boards of Coos and Douglas Forest Protective Associations. Lone Rock relies on Coos and Douglas Forest Protective Associations for fire protection on our lands during those summer months. We have 100 employees that are trained as support firefighters. If things get that bad that the real firefighters need help, then we are qualified to go out and do that kind of support work. But we rely on the professional sort of training and qualifications of the professional forest firefighters that Coos and Douglas provide for us during those summer months. That training is not inconsequential, just like structure firefighters, their credentials are forever increased. The same requirements are of our professional firefighters. Unfortunately, that fire season, or fortunately, I guess, that fire season only lasts for a season, and then in the winter months, those folks aren't needed for firefighting. For several years, it's been an arrangement between the associations and ODOT that they would serve needs of ODOT during those winter months, and then come back to work for the associations and fire protection during the summer. And why we're here and asking for support for this legislation is to make sure that relationship is continued somewhere. Somebody recognized that the associations did not have the authority to make that agreement with ODOT, and this is purely just to clean that up and make it so that we can continue to keep qualified sort of employees and individuals in our communities working in the areas that they're qualified and capable of working in year-round, and that we're not just training them and then they move on to greener pastures. So I would urge support and appreciate the leadership that Representative Esquivel has done on sponsoring this bill, and all of you for listening today. And with that, I'll pass the mic to Mr. Robeson.
Okay. Thank you. Co-Chairs Esquivel, Co-Chair Clem, and members of the committee, I'm Mike Robeson. I'm the district manager for Coos Forest Protective Association, headquartered out of Coos Bay, Oregon. The three operating associations, Coos Forest Protective Association, Douglas Forest Protective Association, and Walker Range Patrol Association, appreciates this opportunity to provide testimony in support of House Bill 4072. I'd like to give you just a brief history of our association personnel participation in what we call the Fire and Ice program, which is working with ODOT for winter work for our seasonals. For many years, at least since 1995, the associations, DFPA, CFPA, and Walker Range, have been providing personnel to ODOT for winter work, and this winter work includes snow plowing and any road maintenance needs to be done during the winter months. Each year varies, but a typical year would affect 15 association employees working for ODOT during the winter season. Most positions with Forest Protective Associations are seasonal fire positions with significant training requirements before we can put them out on the line. Winter employment through ODOT helps significantly to retain these people by providing full-time employment, so that they keep coming back year after year for us as seasonals, and they gain the experience. The Fire and Ice program benefits all landowners and the citizens of Oregon in the following ways. It allows retention of highly trained and experienced employees. It provides a ready workforce of skilled operators for ODOT in the wintertime. And it benefits the Forest Protective Associations by retaining highly trained and experienced firefighters. These highly trained and experienced firefighters often participate on statewide fires as first-line fire supervisors as part of the complete and coordinated firefighting system for Oregon. They're also frequently dispatched to other districts across the state as additional resources for large fires or in anticipation of multiple fires such as lightning events. In summary, throughout the years, we all thought we had authority to work with ODOT. This has been a long-term program, and all of us would like to continue it for the benefit of the employees, all our landowners, and the citizens of Oregon. We have visited with ODOT and with ODF, and they have also indicated support for the program. Both agencies recognize the benefit of retaining association employees. This legislation has no new costs associated with it, and no new positions are needed for this program to continue. So with that, if we can provide assistance anyway for the in the help of the passage of this bill, please do not hesitate to contact us. And thank you for your time this afternoon.
Okay.
We can entertain questions.
Sure. So the other two are just here for questions.
No, they can answer. They can answer questions.
Yeah. No speechifying, though. All right, Representative Schauffler.
Well, your last statement just blew me out. Anyway, thank you, Mr. Chair. What brought this issue forward? I mean, we've been doing it for a long time. How come all of a sudden we got to fix this?
Well, ODOT found that they did not have the authority to enter into an agreement with the associations because we're not a government agency.
If I may, was it ODOT that found that or another department that said that?
ODOT.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess my question is along the same lines in terms of what type of employees are these? Are these, now obviously if you're working for ODOT, I would assume you're a state employee. If you're not, you know, if you're out there on the ranch doing the fire suppression or whatever, that's a different category. Are they that, does ODOT contract with these, with a group, the agency, or, you know, the private sector agency,
yeah,
for these services? Or, I mean, are they partially state employees, partially private sector employees? How does that work?
The fire and ice program that I referred to, that is the contract that ODF has with ODOT.
Okay.
To provide seasonal employees, Oregon Department of Forestry seasonal employees, to ODOT in the wintertime. So ODF participates in this program also. We have a contract with Oregon Department of Forestry. When I say we, this, the operating associations, we're private nonprofit corporations that employ, and then we have a contract with Department of Forestry to provide fire protection on private ground in our districts. The rub is we were tailing on to the fire and ice contract that ODF has with ODOT, and ODOT has discovered that they don't, that we don't have the, we're not an agency, so they have to, they've backed away from that. Mm-hmm. And so our people that we're employing are association employees with ODOT.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. How long have we been doing this practice in the past?
Well, we have a record back to 95. We think that's close.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Yeah, it's sort of weird. I mean, like,
it's real weird.
I think there must have been at some point a prohibition put on contracting with private entities, except that we do it for flagging services and stuff all the time, ODOT. So, I don't, you know, whatever, we'll pass the bill and be done with it. But it is a little strange, I think, is what you're sensing from all of us.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you all for coming up today.
Thanks.
And then Charlie Stone.
Senator Beyer, did he want to talk?
Hmm.
Did Senator Beyer want to talk?
Is he here?
He's right there.
Oh, Roger.
Yeah. Is he on this or not?
Oh. Did you want to talk on this bill?
Yeah.
Good afternoon, Chair Klim, Chair Esquivel, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Charlie Stone with the Department of Forestry. I'm a policy analyst in the Fire Protection Program. First of all, I want to thank Representative Esquivel and all the other co-sponsors for bringing this bill forward, and hopefully we get this minor problem corrected and taken care of. I think that, as you've just discussed, this is a good example of how government can operate efficiently, sharing employees. It's been something that's been discussed over the years in front of Ways and Means. The fact that ODOT has the money to hire these people, and ODF has the positions, and the Forest Protective Associations have employees, and we make it work. It's really important as well for the Department of Forestry that that we retain these well-qualified firefighters, as Mr. Robison mentioned, that while the Forest Protective Associations exist for the purpose of protecting the lands of their members, the State Forester contracts with them to protect all lands in the district as a matter of efficiency, again, so that if whether you're a member of the association or not, they provide the protection. We pass those Forest Patrol assessments on to the associations. Their employees work under the laws and the rules of the state and are appointed as fire wardens by the State Forester. it's a seamless system that works. But as they said, apparently someone in the Department of Transportation got to reading more closely the authority that exists in 477-406 for associations to enter into agreements with government agencies, but it's very specific to for fire prevention and suppression, and then that they can also work with the Department of Forestry on other forest management activities. Didn't cover snow plowing and de-icing and that type of thing. So that's the real crux of this measure, is to correct that and make it very clear that both the associations have the authority to enter into these agreements, but also the Department of Transportation has that authority. I believe in talking with Beth just before the hearing started, we've got some Dash 3 amendments that were prepared very quickly this morning and this afternoon that get the language in there that ODOT feels will be necessary to actually make it work. And it's I don't know that they've even been printed yet, but a key point in those Dash 3 amendments is in an earlier version it used the word department. It needs to say Department of Transportation can enter into these agreements, because under Chapter 477, department is defined as the Forestry Department. We already have the authority to work with the associations. That's not an issue. We need to make sure that Department of Transportation is involved in there. Again, it's all a very technical bill, but it's an important one, and we urge your support for this and moving the Dash 3 amendments when you have a work session on it, if you do. Thank you. I'd be happy to answer questions.
Any questions? Okay. You wowed us. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 4072, and we don't have the paperwork yet, so carry the work session over on House Bill 4072.
I believe Bob.
No. Oh, on this one? Oh, sorry. I thought you meant me afterwards. Bob, come on up. Sorry, man. So can I reopen? Yep. So I'll reopen the public hearing in House Bill 4072.
We thought you were doing baseball sign language.
Yeah. Well, I got something else to talk about later. So.
Chair Clem, Co-Chair Esquivel, committee members, for the record, my name is Bob Livingston. I represent the Oregon State Firefighters Council. Certainly, we have no position on this bill. I think I just need some clarity on, I'm trying to get an understanding of this. I have a little bit of a sense of how our forest protection associations work. I certainly understand how ODOT works. One question that I guess I'm trying to get my hands around is that if they're going to enter into an agreement, and if you're going to take a firefighter in the summer months that's a part-time worker, and now he's a part-time worker for ODOT, I guess in defense of the workers a little bit, the best way to retain good qualified people is to make sure they have a good family wage job. My question is, would the workers in those agreements be eligible for potentially for benefits and those things that usually come with full-time employment, whether you're in the private or public sector, or how would that work and some of those issues? And again, we're not opposed or supportive of the bill, but you know, I think in defense of the workers having known that many of our firefighters that are career firefighters in the suppression business start their careers as part-time, you know, whether it's the Forest Protection Association or whatnot, certainly I think it's an issue of public policy that I would certainly like to know how that would work and whether those, again, those employees would be able to at least have the benefit of recognition for, if they're full-time workers, they should, you know, hopefully have the ability to have full-time benefits. So with that, Mr. Chair, that was just a question. I wasn't sure, and I didn't see that in the bill, so I apologize, and I just saw it on the agenda.
Sure.
Thank you.
Anybody from one of the associations want to take a stab at that? Whoever wants to, come on up.
Am I still on record? Or do I have to?
Restate. Yeah, just say your name again real quick.
Mike Robinson, Coos Forest Protective Association. In response to that, and I can speak for my association specifically, we have rules with our retirement health benefits that if a person works for X amount of months, they're eligible for our insurance packages and our retirement. And in this case, for us, all the employees that are part of the Fire and Ice program have benefits, retirement and health. So they're not getting excluded from that. If they work for a period of time, our rules require that they're part of our program.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah, Representative Schaffler.
Thank you. So you have long-term employees since 95. We've been doing it since 95. You have What's the turnover rate? Do they stay on? Do they work there for a long time? Have you had people there since 95? How does all that work?
Yeah, we have fairly good retention of these employees based on the success of this program. I know for DFPA, their retention of their this level employee that we're talking about is around 15 years. For us, it's around 12 years for CFPA.
Mr. Chair, if I may.
Yeah.
And then it's your association. How many associations are there? Three, are they all comparable packages and pay rates?
I can't speak to Walker Range, but I know that that DFPA and CFPA are
Coos and Douglas.
Very comparable,
I'd like
yes.
To find out, Mr. Chair, if I may. I support you continuing what you're doing here. I mean, I want you putting out fires and plowing the roads.
That was the third
That's
one.
A no-brainer. But my brother back there asked a very good question, and it's really important to me that they're getting a good rate and the benefits, and we're not just bringing a bunch of temps in every 6 months.
Here we are.
Okay, under the fire and ice, I'm R.D. Buell. I'm the district manager for Walker Range Fire Patrol. Under the Walker Rangers plan, these people become 12 months employees with full benefit packages, raise, they get retirement, they get the whole works. And our turnaround is about 20 years on these people before we lose them to usually a federal agency.
Our concern is if we do lose this, then we won't retain the people, and that's the name of the game.
Yeah, my guess is actually probably before it was worse because they had a summer job, and then I had a lot of friends who they were the lower level guys who they worked for. I'm from Coos Bay, so they worked for the Coos protective deal. That was their summer job. Mm-hmm. But if there wasn't any work in the winter, it'd just be a seasonal job, and that'd be the end of it. This makes more of a full-time employment opportunity.
Well, and firefighting is a trade that's learned over time. It's not something you learn out of college. So we need these people around so that we get the best bang for the buck for everybody. You can't.
Not Kevin Goodwin. Don't ever produce another Kevin Goodwin. That's all I'm telling you.
I know his dad. I've worked a long time with his dad. So
Chuck's all right, but Kevin, not so much. I'm going to talk to you on the record about that later, Kevin. Okay. All right.
Thank you.
Apologies, Mr. Chair, for my later.
No problem. Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
I'm going to close the we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 4072, carry over the work session on House Bill 4072. Any other orders of business from anybody? All right, we'll adjourn the committee.